name this morning. It's good to be here and appreciated the service so far and finishing up Job and kind of concluding what his life means to us, and that was interesting. I enjoyed that study on Job. I'd like to talk about a famous Bible character, and one of our favorite, at least my favorite, probably one of yours too, and his life a little bit, and just take some lessons from him. Speaking about Daniel, and I'm going to read quite a bit of Daniel's life, and some of the major events of his life, and just talk about how that we can maybe take some lessons to live our lives like Daniel did. For me, it's always so encouraging to read about some person who lived his life out in a godly way in a place where everybody around him didn't know God. He was alone, or at least almost alone. He might have had a few friends. It's very encouraging to me to read that and just see that, you know, when I think about living the life today, living the Christian life today, and thinking about, I have lots of examples that I can look back on and take heart from their lives and their example and make it an encouragement to myself. So I'd like to do that today with Daniel. Of course, we all know the story about Daniel and the lion's den. I'd like to talk about that too a little bit. And but Daniel's life before he got to the lion's den also, and just the things that led up to that, and the circumstances of his life. He had a very difficult, I think we could say he had a very difficult youth. As a young man, what happened to him, something that many of us have never experienced. He was taken from his home, from his country, from his family, and taken to a foreign land, and yet he was able to remain faithful to God, even in that sinful place, surrounded by people that mostly worshipped idols, and there was many different gods they could choose from. And there he was in this enormous city, surrounded by all these people, and yet he shone as the brightest star in that dark place. Okay, I'd like to read just the first seven verses of chapter 1 of Daniel, just to get a setting here a little bit. It tells how that Daniel came to Babylon. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children, in whom was no blemish, but well-favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. So here's what happened to Daniel and his friends, and apparently some others that we don't know their names. Nebuchadnezzar came, and it was a dark time for Israel, because they had been living sinfully. Their king had led them in a very sinful path, and God judged them. The king of Babylon came, besieged them, and took them, and overthrew their kingdom. Basically, they became his subjects. Although they still had the king in place, a king that Nebuchadnezzar appointed, they were basically under the rule of Nebuchadnezzar. And he wanted to bring some of these people. Apparently, he had a respect for the learning and the education of others, and he thought, well, we'll take some of these brighter and well-educated Jews, and we'll bring them. I'd like to have them in my court, and they can maybe give me some some education or some information that I wouldn't be able to get otherwise. I have a fun little timeline of the book of Daniel, and this was around the 605 BC, so before Christ, 600 years before Christ is when this occurred. And Daniel was one of these young men that was taken. And you can imagine what it would have been like, maybe, to have been torn from your family and from your homeland and from your religion and your people and taken to this place that you probably heard about as being a very wicked and idolatrous place, very powerful country. And the king, of course, probably the king that was the most famous and well-known and most powerful of that time. He wants you to come to his country, and he's going to indoctrinate you and make you part of his royal assembly, or whatever you might call it. And Babylon was really an impressive place. From what I read, it says that the city was probably about 14 miles square on each side. So it would have taken you a good portion of a day just to walk one side of it. The wall around it was 56 miles long, it was 300 feet high, and it was 25 feet thick, and there was a second wall inside of that yet. And this wall went 35 feet below the ground. So they dug it in. They weren't going to let anybody get in that wasn't supposed to be in. And then on top of that, there was a moat, some water all around the city. And the river Euphrates ran through the middle of it. And, of course, one of the seven wonders of the world was the hanging gardens that Nebuchadnezzar had put up. And I'm not sure how they looked. I've seen pictures of people put of artists that drew what they think it looked like. It's an amazing place. Supposedly the most magnificent palace ever erected at that time was Nebuchadnezzar's palace. And very significant to the Jews would have been the fact that there was an image of Baal and a golden table of some sort that was 50,000 pounds out of pure gold. So the Babylonians were famous, strong, powerful people, and to the Jews, they would have been seen as, you know, the major power and the major influence of idol worship and so on. Of course, the Israelites had been very idolatrous too, most of them. But we find here four young men that were not idolaters. They were very, I would have loved to have heard something about their upbringing, their families, because apparently they were taught very well about the true God of Israel, and they had kept that in their heart, because they were young men when they were taken. And one commentary suggested between 12 and 14, another said probably more like 18. So I don't know, but youth, they were definitely youth. They were young. They were impressionable, and without a strong sense of who they were and who God was, they weren't going to last in a place where they were supposed to go for 3 years to be trained to be worthy of attending the king. So they were taken from their homeland, and they were taken to this great city of Babylon, the wicked city of Babylon, and given names. One of the very first things that happened to them, to erase all of their Jewish past, they were given names, Babylonian names. And I'm just going to go over their names a little bit, because I thought it was interesting what they mean and the new names that were given them as well. So Daniel means God is my judge. Belteshazzar, which was his new name, means Bel's prince, and Bel was a god of Babylon. Hananiah means whom Jehovah hath favored. Shadrach, his new name, is illumined by the sun god. Mishael is who is like God. His new name, Meshach, means who is like Shaq, which was one of their gods. His name was Shaq. Azariah, whom Jehovah helps, and his new name, Abednego, meant servant of the shining fire. So each of them was given a name that was basically pointing to one of the gods of Babylon. Each of them was dedicated, so to speak, to a god of Babylon. So not only have you given up your past, your history and your family and your homeland, now they've given you a new name that's totally foreign, and it's to an idol. They basically have given you a name that refers to an idol. And for 3 years, they're going to be trained in the ways of the Chaldeans. And hopefully by the time they're done, we will be worthy to go before the king and counsel the king and maybe educate the king about some things that he doesn't know and help him in whatever ways they did. But this isn't the king of Israel. This is not a king that understands God. This is a king of Babylon. This is the king who worships idols. And so what are you going to say when you face this king as a Jew, as a believer in one God? What are you going to say? Are you even going to survive to tell what you told him? Because King Nebuchadnezzar, he holds complete power over your life. You live and die at his command. So I can imagine the pressure that was on these young men as they thought about what their life was going to mean in Babylon. It was enormous pressure. They had 3 years to fold under this pressure and decide, you know, I'm just going to give up. I'm going to assimilate. I'm going to become one of them. There's nobody else here. It's just me and, you know, these three other guys. And, you know, what chance do we have to stand up under this pressure? What's the point? But they didn't forget God. They kept that all in their hearts, and they were able to withstand that pressure. And I'm going to read the rest of this chapter here and what happened to them. The very first thing that really they faced and how they dealt with it, starting at verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, the steward, Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Pulse was, I think you could translate that vegetables, basically. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all of the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. So here was the first test that they faced. They faced the fact that they were supposed to eat something that was forbidden to them as Jews. And, you know, there's all sorts of ideas and thoughts that might have went through their head about excuses. You know, we're in a foreign land. How are we supposed to make them, how are we supposed to expect them to follow what we want? And, you know, how's anybody going to know, and what's the importance of this? But they stood up for this thing. And as a result, they were given the chance to prove it. And God came through, and at the end of 10 days, which to me is a very short time to show any difference in health between two people who are eating different food, but at the end of 10 days, it was obvious to the man in charge that they were better off than the others. And he let them continue with their diet the way they wanted to. And, you know, to me, the lesson here is that, you know, the world around us wants to impose their ideas and their values on us. And how do we respond to that? Do we just waffle and say, okay, you know, I'll take it, at least part of it. It's not quite right, but it's okay, I'll take it. Or do we have an alternative? Do we have a godly alternative? You know, the four young men here, they not only said, we aren't going to eat this, we are going to do it this way. And I think as Christians, we have to have that alternative. We can't just say, no, that's wrong, and not come up with a godly answer to the question. We have to live out and make that displayed in our lives, the values, the godly values that we have. We can't just say the world's wrong and twisted. We have to live what's right and what's proper. We need to stand faithfully by God and His standards. So Daniel and his friends proved that their first loyalty, their first responsibility was to God, and they passed this test of the food. And, you know, I think they had doubts. I'm sure they had fears. They knew what could happen. The king's steward told him himself, you know, I'm afraid for my head. If you guys come and you appear to be not as healthy, he said, it's going to be my fault. It's going to go on my shoulders. And the king is going to execute me. And, you know, I'm sure they had these fears. They knew that the king was a very prone, it appears that he was prone to anger. And, you know, that would have been the end of them. But they were willing to risk that for the truth and for the right. They could have argued about the practicality of what they were doing, but they didn't. They said, we're going to stick to what God asked us to do, and if we lose our heads, so be it. And, you know, I think that another lesson here is that God is faithful, and He sees our faithfulness too. When we're faithful in small things, and we may look at this as a small thing, but when we're faithful in small things, God doesn't miss that. He doesn't ignore it. It doesn't go unnoticed. Others may not care, but, you know, we're not being faithful to God because of others. We shouldn't be looking at other people for our approval in that sense. And Daniel and his friends could have gotten away with this thing, and their other friends could have, you know, might have never found out. But to them, it was between them and God, and they knew what they had to do. And it was just a small step, the beginning step of faith that they took in their lives. I don't think it was actually that small. But as they moved on, they faced more things. And I'd like to read further here. I'm going to skip over to chapter 4. It says that in chapter 1 there, it said that Daniel was given, I can find the verse here. Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And soon this came in very handy when the king had a dream that he couldn't remember. And he asked his magicians and counselors to tell him not only the meaning of the dream, but also what he had actually dreamed. And they said, no, king, that's impossible. It can't be done. He said, well, I've had it with you. And he said, you're all going to die. But Daniel, he found out about this. And I'm always impressed with Daniel's tact in the way he spoke to people. He was able to speak to the man in charge, asked to see the king. The king spoke to him. And he said, you know, the Lord can reveal the secret to this dream. And I'd like to read verse 19 here. This is after the king told, or this is after, let's see, this is after the king had said, sorry, I skipped that dream. Anyway, this is the second dream that the king had regarding what was going to happen to him personally. And Daniel didn't shrink from telling the truth here. In verse 19, he says, then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, the dream to be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. And then he went on, starting in verse 24, and told the king what the interpretation of this dream was. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. They that shall drive thee from men, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree of the roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt rule, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, and if it may be, a lengthening of thy tranquility. You know, Daniel, this is the second dream he did for, he interpreted for Nebuchadnezzar. And in the first one, especially, I was going to read that and I missed that, but he gave glory to God for the interpretation of the dream. But I was really impressed how that in this case, he gave a very bad interpretation, you could say. The king, this was obviously not good news to the king. The king was going to be insane, and he was going to, you know, this terrible thing was going to happen to him. But Daniel didn't shrink from telling him the truth. He told him the truth, and after he told him the truth, he told him, you know, this is what you ought to do. And I have to think, you know, Daniel was not afraid, but he very tactfully told the king, this is what your response ought to be to this dream and the interpretation. Now, the king apparently didn't really follow his example because this all came to pass to the king. But he didn't shrink from telling him. And, you know, I had to think, Daniel went on to serve other kings. And I think it was this truthfulness that impressed these men, and they kept him on as a counselor to them. They realized that he wasn't going to tell them falsehood just to be in their favor. He would be honest, and he would tell them the truth. It could have been the end of his career, but it wasn't. Okay, I'd like to move on to chapter 6 and read about Daniel in the lion's den. The interesting thing to me is that Daniel was a young man when he came to Babylon, but many years had passed, and approximately 5 kings had passed by the time we get to chapter 6. And it's hard to imagine a person remaining in favor with a new kingdom. Okay, so Nebuchadnezzar died, and his son reigned for a short time, and several other people, and then Belshazzar came along, and we know how Daniel interpreted the dream about Belshazzar and how the kingdom was going to be taken away from him, and in that case he had to tell some really bad news as well. And that very night, Belshazzar was killed, and Cyrus took over the kingdom. And he took the river Euphrates that went through the city, he diverted the river so that they could all go underneath where the river had went underneath the wall of the city. And apparently the Babylonians had really done a poor job of defense at that time. They were just partying and they weren't paying attention. And Cyrus was able to overtake the kingdom. But here we find Daniel, again, in a position of authority with Cyrus. He so impressed Cyrus that he kept him on as a important man in his kingdom. In fact, he became one of the top men next to the king. And, you know, it just speaks again of Daniel's truthfulness and faithfulness, that he could go from one king to another. I'm sure that many of the people that served under Belshazzar were executed simply for being Babylonians. They were not of the new sort, the Medes or the Persians. But Daniel survived. And now we find him, he's probably around 65 years old. He's an older man now. So I'm going to read in chapter 6 here. And this was after, I'm sorry, I said it was Darius who took over, but it was actually, Cyrus. It's actually Darius who I should have said. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these 3 presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give account unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto the king, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal decree and to make a firm decree, which whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Notice that they left out one important person here. All the presidents of the kingdom, they missed one. Daniel obviously wasn't in on this. And they very, very sneakily appealed to the king's vanity. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his window being opened in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed, and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, The thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, That Daniel, which is one of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is, that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king signed it, sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting, neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel, and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, forasmuch as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceedingly glad for him, and he commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. And the king commanded, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had the mastery of them, and brake all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, and people, nations, and languages that dwell on the earth, Peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So, amazing story. Every time I read it, I'm just amazed at the deliverance and also the result that it brought to the people of Babylon. You know, jealousy found Daniel. He was an old man, but these other people became jealous of him. He faced a choice here. He could have made it easy on himself. He could have decided, I'm going to pray inside the house. I'm not going to open my window and pray in the open like that anymore. I'll just pray inside the house. They won't even see it. How can they accuse me? But Daniel refused to compromise on that. You know, I had to think, Daniel so valued his prayer life that he wasn't going to compromise in that way. And, you know, the world tells us, too, that we shouldn't be too committed. We shouldn't be too sold out. There's little things that we don't have to do. But, you know, our lives should be a distinct contrast between sin. There should be a distinct contrast between our lives and the sin of the world. And people saw that in Daniel. And the king obviously knew about Daniel's worship of God, and he respected him for it. So there's going to be opposition. There's going to be condemnation. People are going to say you're crazy, and they're going to want you to compromise in some way. But look at Daniel's example, and look at the glory that he got, that the Lord won in this instance, because Daniel was faithful in this little prayer time that he had 3 times a day. And in the end, Daniel also was willing to let God determine what was going to happen to him. Daniel had no promise that God was going to deliver him from the lions. As with the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fire, they had no promise that God was going to deliver them out of that. They were going to die in the fire, or God was going to save them by a miracle. They didn't know which. But they were convinced that what they were doing was right, and they weren't willing to compromise on something like that. And it takes a lot of faith to let God determine what's going to happen to you when you're facing hard times. It takes a lot of faith to just give it up and say, okay, God, I'm going to follow you like Job, and you know, whatever happens to me, I'm still going to follow you. But Daniel did it. He purposed in his heart at the beginning of this, he purposed in his heart not to be defiled by the king's meat, and he kept that purpose throughout his whole life. The amazing thing to me, too, is the fact that at the end of this chapter, we see a heathen king in the wicked city of Babylon writing a decree to all his people, saying, you need to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. And you know, imagine what would have happened if Daniel had compromised in this case. This decree would never have been written. Many, many people would not have heard about the story of Daniel and the lions den and have wondered at the amazing deliverance that this God had brought. They wouldn't have heard about God. But because Daniel was faithful, a king in a foreign idolatrous nation wrote a decree basically proclaiming God as being the one that they should worship. And it was all because of this simple faithfulness of Daniel. And you know, Daniel went on to live and serve under Cyrus as well, the next king in line. And people talked about Daniel, even in his time. I thought it was interesting that Ezekiel was writing, and he was a contemporary somewhat of Daniel. And he says that He was talking about a judgment that was coming, and he said that though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in this place, they would deliver their own souls by their righteousness. Daniel was well known, he was well respected, and it was because of his faithfulness, his steadfastness, his unwillingness to compromise when times got tough. And even though he was an old man, he was willing to remain steadfast to the Lord. And it's just a real encouragement to me, and hope it is to you, to read about people like Daniel who made a purpose at the beginning of their lives and carried that purpose all the way to the end, and the many ways that God was glorified by their being faithful to him. And that's all I have. I'll close with that. I'll leave it open a little bit for any testimony you might have.